Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Better. I pick up all the plans.
Oops. That's not the theme for the day. Stop. Go. Something's wrong. It's normally me.
Be there to listen.
I can, I will.
Know the sign.
Seek it.
My God, it's such a struggle. What I'm about to say. But it's okay. Because we're being happy today. We're going to talk to the chef about being happy. So we're going to, I want to talk to you about being happy as you get older. Okay?
Yeah.
How old are you? You're older than me. How old are you?
74.
74? Boom.
And looking for more.
That's halfway to 148, baby. Holy smoke.
Yeah.
The all right, so let's do you have any secrets to being happy? I mean, you've been on the planet a few years.
Yeah.
You have any secrets to being happy?
No major secrets that everybody has at their disposal. You know, you just eat well and play hard, and when you have to work, you work hard, and so you can enjoy your time off. And I've always worked since I was 14, and when I sold the restaurant at 70, I said 50 years in the restaurant business. That's that's a great run.
That'll kill you.
And well, most people it does, but I came through the other side, and so that made me real happy.
You came through the other side?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't get bogged down with a lot of stuff that can happen to you in the restaurant business. So
let me ask you this question.
I'm just relaxing now.
Right.
I'm doing my little leather work, but...
hold on, let me kill the music. As we get older, what started this was a discussion about, we can now, because of the internet and the way, how much stuff on television, we don't have to interact a whole lot with people. And again, while you have kids at home and stuff like that, you know, you're forced to do it and your life is busy.
Yes, it is.
But once your kids leave, you know, it's not difficult to withdraw into yourself. And it kind of started talking about mental health and suicide and things like that. And one of the common symptoms, and every person who takes their life does it for a different reason, but one of the common themes is people tend to begin to isolate themselves from relationships that they had been a part of, and I just don't mean with the opposite sex. I mean with friends and things you do in your life. I'm curious your thoughts about that. It certainly is easier these days to stay busy yet be isolated. Does that make sense?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. You can get locked into sitting on your ass and watching TV all day, or being a gamer on the internet, and but you lose contact with people. You see people in restaurants, and they're sitting. What the fuck does that mean?
Wait, hold on.
You got the ability to not converse.
Oh.
With each other. That's all I'm saying. I mean, see, when you're in a career, you know, you communicate with people, you have to, and when you get retired, you can crawl into a shell. Myself, I thrive on relationships. I have friends that I have had for the 50 years or more, and I love communicating with them and talking about what they're doing now and how they're staying busy or what they're doing when they're retired, because I have a lot of friends that are retired now. And to I had a real good friend who killed himself. He had just retired, but he had a mental. He was fighting depression,
right?
And he was taking medication. But anyway, I'm just saying. Sorry.
No. I let me tell you, because that's all part of it, and it's all made worse as you can begin to isolate yourself. And probably doesn't create those symptoms, but it certainly makes them worse. It certainly makes them worse. And so I was wondering, I was reading an article that somebody sent to me this morning and said, you got to get out there and mix it up. You got to, join a fitness group, join a walking group, join a group that meets for coffee and interact.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you will, that's the way we've normally historically lived our lives, as part of a church, where people met you and, there's Mr. McNamara, He's a goofball, that one. But he's every month, he's at the pancake breakfast at church. And, you were part of something. So, I don't know. I'm just curious about your thoughts about it.
Well, I know exactly, that you have to, keep interacting with people. Like going to the gym, which I do 3 days a week.
Nice.
I have people in the condominium I see on a daily basis. I go around and make my rounds to all the chefs that I've mentored and that are working in town and go around and give them shit. And
get free food.
Yeah. And taste their any new stuff that they're doing.
Exactly.
And the thing is, I insist upon, because I still lean on them. I still, what are you doing new now? Come out, give me something new. And they got to keep, they miss having me putting pressure on them. I know they do. And I get that a lot, miss seeing you around and the former customers. I do miss that. There's no question about how much I miss going into work every day. But when you're physically unable to perform the way I feel I was capable of doing it.
Can I ask you about that? Because that's something that as you get older, you can't do some of the things that your life used to, I know for you. And I know a sad day in your life was you had to sell your Harley. How do you deal with that?
Well, a couple of ways. I sold my Harley because I was driving around town one summer and it's okay when I'm out on the highway cranking along at 60 to 80 miles an hour or faster maybe, but that's one thing on a straight road. But in North Dakota, you don't have the traffic problems you do driving in the cities. But around town, I found come to a stop and settling, putting one foot down. Then it was 2 feet, and then my balance was starting. I saw it starting to go, and admitting that it was going. Was hard for me, no question about it. because if I had a bed by my Harley, I would have slept by it. That's how I thought about it. Sorry, Mac, but that's true.
It's okay. It's
and,
right.
uh, But I said, God damn, I gotta sell my bike, you know. I never dumped it there in a big way. It's tipped over a couple of times. That's because I was in my cups a little bit, and I never even got started, and they took my key away from me and drove me home. But that only happened once. But otherwise, just driving it around town, quick stops, turning, and the balance was going. And a lot of it was my myopathy that I have for my diabetes. And then I couldn't stand over a stove and cook for 8 hours anymore. And that was a crushing blow to me, to go from the kitchen to working the floor, which I'm great at.
Right.
But it just wasn't cooking.
So how do you deal with it though? So I mean, you say it's tough, but are there things that you do in its place? Is that the secret? I'm listening to my grandmother right now. When God closes a door, He opens a window, and you got to look for the window.
Yes, He does.
And is that the key to it? Because it's simply the march of time.
Yes, it is what it is. You enjoy every decade that comes and goes, but instead of cooking a full time, I started doing the first shift. The first set, we call it. When the doors open, that's the first set, and around 7:30, 8:30, it changes into the next shift. Normally, in my joints, you work straight through. I didn't have a bunch of employees, and you had to be butch. Well, I wasn't as butch as I was, so I got involved in doing more recipes, studying my cookbooks and looking recipes up and trying stuff and teaching my kitchen staff. And then when I stopped cooking on the line altogether, I still threw myself into teaching the guys and answering any questions they had. But I threw myself into working the room.
So it's finding another way to contribute initially. Talk to me about in retirement.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden you retire and you have all kinds of time on your hands. How do you stay involved and active? And not go down that road of, because I would think once you retire, and you're not working, it's not too difficult, right? I'm going to watch the Dodger game at this time, or I'm going to watch the hockey game at this time. I'm going to get up, I'll make breakfast, I'll read the paper, I'll go for a walk, and to not really interact with anybody. And the article that I read said, hey, look, the secret to happy, you know, it's even in the Constitution, Kim. Of the country, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's in our Constitution, right? But they said, you know what? We think in the United States, we've come to think that America, as Americans, well, if I have this, I'll be happier. If I do this, really, the key to being happy is relationships. So you got to go out and you got to get involved. So I guess as you retired, did you do anything consciously? You talk about working out and things like that. Did you do anything consciously to stay active?
Well, I worked with leather.
Right.
I started it back in the late 60s, early 70s. And then when I came back from Europe, I threw myself into work because that's what I wanted to do, and I set the leather aside. Well, when I retired 4 years ago, I started working. I pulled the leather out, and I had some buffalo hides, some Buzz Earls for them, and I started making bags and stuff with it. walking stick that I made a leather handle for. I'll send you a picture of it. I made a little shoulder purse, for my niece who just graduated from college, and I got another one graduating, from Smith, in December. And so I'm going to do another one for her. I got Kelly Thompson. I got people that give me orders, and, I make little stuff, pouches and things, and, keychains and, or leather things you can hook your keys onto. And that's what keeps me busy. My dexterity, it helps my dexterity with my hands and keeps me focused. And I'm got a little setup where I listen to tunes all the time through my phone and CDs through a CD player I had in the office at the restaurant.
Okay, so you got a hobby. You got a hobby, you're doing that. And all right. But just so everybody knows, you're married, and so it's you and Miss B, hanging out.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. So we try to do if there are any decent movies, we'll go to a movie a week. We finally went to one last week, I watch sports, of course I do, every chance I get, there are certain shows that I watch on TV, but I read, I'm reading stuff.
I didn't really want to know about everything you did. I'm just curious about the whole, as the major things lead your life.
That's what I do to fill my day.
Right. And then.
And I'm very happy with it. I'm not one of those cats that, I hate retirement. I don't understand that. I mean, yes, I know you had a great job for 30, 40, 50 years. But didn't you develop any interest along the way in things that you wanted to do?
You know what? I have to say that I understand it. I mean, because a lot of people, their life is their work, you know? It's their social. And you know what I mean? It's more so, and you're a good example of this. You know, when Kim's Restaurant was probably the best restaurant between Seattle and Minneapolis. All right. And so it was always, it was a cool place to go. It was always crowded. And Kim was the man. And so, I mean, you can imagine, Kim, that's a little bit addicting, to be the star of the show and it's my joint. And it's also a lot of pressure on a nightly basis, but I mean, you were very successful at it. And so you can see how though that would become very addicting. And when you stepped away from it, it's like, man, they took away my star. I what do? Where do I go? So I can understand it.
Yeah. Of course you can.
Right.
And I understand it too. But, stuff can't go on forever. A job can't go on forever.
Mm.
But you have to maintain the happiness in your life by trying to figure out what you can do that'll make you happy in a different way. I don't have the answers for that. It's an individual thing. But you try not to get down on yourself or get into a deep funk. But it happens, and I understand it, and I can appreciate it, and I see the difficulty of people giving stuff up.
All right. So if you
just turn into a slug,
right?
That's all I'm saying.
Here's an email question: if you could give one piece of advice, Chef, relative to being happy in retirement, when life does slow down a little bit, what would that be? Mac, I'm also curious about what you have to say, but only after the chef answers first. Chef?
Well, I've always been a happy person, and I just look for things that I can do, and I've pretty much outlined what I do for me that satisfies and gratifies me. Do I miss the business? Of course I do.
No, okay, but you're getting sidetracked. If you could, one recommendation to people that in retirement, what would that be?
Find a hobby.
Okay.
And be happy.
Find
something to do to keep yourself busy. I don't care what it is, but you have to stay active in one way or another, because that's when, if you just sit around and are melancholy, it's no good.
Yeah,
you gotta figure out something to do.
It's pretty broad, and
don't just wait till you retire to do so. Look ahead and say, okay, what am I going to do in the next chapter of my life? And that's how you approach it. You know, okay, I got a new chapter coming up. I got to figure out what the hell to do now. And it's going to keep me the juices flowing. And that's what I've done with my leather work. That's all.
All right. Yeah, I would say my recommendation is join some kind of a fitness group that takes you out of your house, because I even see a trap in you know, Kim trudging down and being by himself working. You know, if you're not married and if you're not getting out, so my own opinion is you have to do something that physically takes you out of your house and physically forces you to interact with other people. And so that's my opinion. My opinion is do those things, because that, again, because of how all the cool stuff that's on TV, because of having a cell phone and everything that comes through that, your home can become a tomb, if you will, that it takes great effort to get out of. And so to me, you have to build things. Start going back to church. You know, and there's a stupid one. You might say, oh, Mac, or no, look, let me just say this about organized religion. As we all get older, I think we all struggle with the trappings of organized religion. Okay? But organized religion is the social fabric, has been the social fabric of a lot of communities for a lot of decades in our nation's history. Right? It's the men's club. It's the women's club. It's all the different events. And let me just tell you, it can be part of your social life, you know, as well as part of your spiritual life. Now you don't have to eat the whole meal, all right? I will tell you, you can a la carte some of the stuff, all right? And you can have your own broad mental reservation about things. But can it be a quality piece of your life? You bet your ass it can. Okay? And don't poo-poo that. So I would say the things, they physically have to get you out of your home, and you have to interact with others. Okay? Because again, I think the danger is, I've got a couple other links that people have sent, it's the danger of being, isolating yourself. And you can stay busy and isolate yourself, and you kid yourself that you have this active life, when in fact, when was the last time you went and hung out with another person or a group of people? I don't know, 9 months ago. Okay, you need to get that on the list. So that would be my recommendation. Any other final thoughts there, Chef Man, before we start talking food?
Yeah, I've never had I don't want isolation. I thrive on contact with people, and I make it a point to get out every week, and I don't sit around in my cage downstairs and do leather. It's only a couple hours a day, maybe three, four, but I'm usually out and about. I go out, get my car, and go visit people. I go to the coffee shop and shop and see who's around.
You know what?
And then I start
Somebody just sent me an email that said
that. I love cruising, Mac. You know me.
Oh, no. I know that. You know what? Somebody just sent me this. Mac, join a coffee clutch. As much as people like to drink coffee, start going to a coffee shop at about the same time every day to get your coffee. And then you'll find yourself sitting down and talking to people, and there'll be a little group that shows up. And I will tell you, that's a little bit of a throwback, but it's not a bad idea. It checks the block on something you just said, which was you have to physically interact with other human beings.
Yes,
you know what? Yeah, I think that's true. To that end, I should probably start coaching baseball again.
Well, and that'd be good.
Yeah. Something I enjoy. The
I enjoyed watching you coach in Grand Forks when you coached the high school team.
You know what's really cool? As I've gotten older, I have players and Marines who will write me now, and they say, I was quoting you yesterday. I thought I'd say hi. What'd you say? Like, if I'm embarrassed, if you knew all of the material of yours that I've stolen, you would thrash me. And I'd say,
I love hearing that.
I'd say, well, do you footnote it? Do you say this is from like the smartest and best officer I ever served under? They say, God, no, I don't. I never do that. They think I'm the epitome of what a leader is. Excuse me. Made me laugh. I said, well, you know what? I can live with that because I never footnoted anybody else's stuff. Somebody said, you know, when you coached us, I use the things that you did. I use the things that you say all the time. And, and I did nothing but borrow from other people. I was a great beneficiary of my father and watching him. One of the great things he used to say was, when you handle yourself, use your head. When you handle others, use your heart. And, I never forgot that. And I think it's great advice. And I borrowed from all kinds of other people along the way. So, I did nothing that was very novel. But it is cool as you get older. And so to me, being a leader and mentoring is something I've always enjoyed doing. So I need to do that again. But I'm still lucky though in my life in that having a child when you're 45, right? Colleen ended her freshman year yesterday. And, exactly. So she'll be a sophomore next year. So, that in and of itself gets you out and about. And, you know, I mean, I told the story just recently of going to the school board meeting, to tell them to act, relative to, you know, making the school safe and things like that. Don't wait for your study. Do the things you know you're supposed to do and do them quickly. And you can evolve the solution from there. Got involved in a PTO meeting, and I'll probably get more involved in the upcoming year. So anyway, that helps. But I think that, I mean, even for me, I've thought about that. And, you know, just if you're a veteran, veterans organizations, start there and work out from there and just go through different doors and make a difference in your community. I can see how it's very easy, you know, between cable TV, your cell phone, and going for walks by yourself, how you can slowly but surely spin in your own orbit, and that's not good for anybody. We're talking about being happy today, just in case you know. We're all happy radio today. But do you want to talk about are there any foods that are happy?
Any foods?
Any foods that are, that
think
you would
about anything you eat.
Anything you eat is happy.
I know your favorite food is taco and a ribeye steak.
Yeah.
I bet a healthy taco and a ribeye steak with béarnaise, and a shrimp cocktail. It's what do you, and food is what do you like to eat, man?
Yeah, you're right.
And then try different ways that preparation. Yeah.
All right, give me something new to do to a steak because it is summer. a lot of people grilling. give me something new to do to a steak.
Okay. Something new you can do to a steak?
Yeah.
You can blacken it. You get cayenne, you get paprika, you get peppers, red chili flakes, you're a seasoning blend, and you get this blend of, but it's got to be hot, and you know, fresh ground peppercorns, and then you cover your steak all over. You press this into your steak, whether it's a ribeye or a filet. New York, doesn't matter. And you blacken it. And you can cook it on the grill. But you have to let it sit for an hour or two so that the moisture in the steak sucks in that flavor and the heat from the seasoning. And then you slap it on the hot grill and do what we've talked about with it. And don't keep flipping it. Just you flip it once. You could flip it to make your cross, marks on the steak, but then only flip it once and then do the same with the cross marks. Cook it to your pull-out max digital thermometer, stick it in your meat, and check it out, and there you have it. But, you know, everybody talks about blackening fish. Try blackening a steak, and then it's pretty good. And then with that blackened steak, if you want, you put a compound butter, a slab of compound butter when it comes off the grill and let that butter melt into the blackening seasoning.
We love that.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we just blackened some fish, last week, some red snapper. God damn, it was good. Blackening a steak, I'm sure people don't think along those lines. So if you want to try that, and the compound butter just has, I would make it out of garlic or shallots, minced fine, a little bit of parsley, and butter, salt, if it's sweet butter, and a little pepper. And if you want to make it really hot, you make a compound butter with shallots, diced jalapenos, parsley, and butter. And you make that the day before, so all those flavors. You keep it in the fridge, roll it up like we've talked about with the saran wrap. And so you cut off a slab about a quarter inch thick to put on your finished meat that's been blackened. And then you'll have that little jalapeno flavor in there. The shallot is or garlic, whatever you prefer. I like shallots better than onions. It's kind of a, you know, fan of this more close. It's onion and a garlic flavor, kind of. But I use shallots a lot now. But diced jalapenos. My wife loves jalapeno. So there you go.
I've never
a little feedback next week from that.
I've never done that. I've never blackened a steak.
Yeah, well, try it.
Right.
You'd be surprised. Now, I've told people about crushing a tablespoon of, you know, grinding a tablespoon of black pepper, or just taking peppercorns and putting and put them in a blender and just kind of break them up a little bit, and then pressing your steak into the peppercorns, and then you make you cook that, and you wrap it in foil, let it rest, and then you make a sauce. Before you pull the steak out, you take an ounce of cognac or brandy, and you flame that steak, and then the alcohol will burn off, but you'll get the steak flavor in, the brandy flavor in there, and then you pull it out, and you put a little beef stock in there, and then add cream, and then you have a peppercorn sauce, and you have green peppercorns that come in little cans or jars. You can get in any grocery store, and you drain the liquid off, but you throw the peppercorns in with the when you put the beef stock and the cream in. And like for each pepper steak, you only need about a tablespoon of beef stock and about 2 tablespoons of cream and about a teaspoon of peppercorn. And that makes an absolutely spectacular steak. And if you cook your steak in a cast iron skillet, or you have a little cast iron skillet on your grill that you can do this sauce if you want, you're in the front row. And you reduce the cream. It'll thicken up naturally. You don't have to put any Wonder or anything like that to thicken it. It cream thickens when you reduce it. And the color of the sauce will go from white to kind of like a brown color, which is what you want. And there you go. Well, there's 2 ways to try your steaks this summer. But the peppercorn needs a cast iron skillet.
Got it. We're talking food. We're talking being happy. We're talking about different things grilling. Here's an email question. Hey, Mac, I really enjoyed this segment. Just recently listened to it on the podcast relative to setting up your grill. Now that grilling season is in full swing, is there anything the chef has been reminded of, since he's probably grilling a lot more, relative to setting up your grill that he would share with us today? Well done on that. I looked online and started seeing all the different ways you configure charcoal, which I do a fair amount of. I was honestly amazed. I'm headed for a high-end grilling store tomorrow to buy a charcoal container that pens it in half of my Weber kettle. I think that'll be cool, and it'll help me do a lot of the things that you guys were discussing. Well done, boys.
Well,
so
that was fabulous.
Talk to anything else that you would recommend? Now that you're grilling a lot?
Any kind of container, it depends on how much food, how big's your Weber, how much charcoal you use.
No. Here's the question.
What?
The question is this. Now that you're grilling more, is there anything that you're reminded of or that you would tell us now that we didn't cover before, since you're doing it on a fairly, on a much more regular basis? You can
If you've been talking and listening to us, we've covered the grilling thoroughly. I'm really a monster of indirect heating in grilling, and I use it more now than I've ever used before for just about everything I cook on the grill now. And I have a gas grill, but it's just as easy to do on a Weber now that you're going to that store and buying a charcoal basket. You might want to check about buying charcoal little baskets for both sides of the Weber and leaving the middle open.
It's okay. I mean, you can say no. I mean, that's no crime. I mean, we covered it pretty well that day. I will tell you this. I'm an incredible green egg odor. I am amazed at how little charcoal I use on a day. Every time I grill, you know, I'll put a little bit more charcoal in there, maybe half of what I would normally put in. I use it, and then when we're done, I just close off the air vents into the egg, and it goes out, and you reuse it. What's not burned, you reuse it. It's very cool. Very cool. The green egg. Nice.
It's funny. I was at Dakota TV. That's where we get our grills. And Matt got his green egg. And man, do they have some nice green eggs and shapes. And I mean, it's still the egg shape, but the smaller ones are nice too.
That's
a superior grill.
What's interesting about the green egg is that when you go look at them, the things that you can put the egg in terms of these beautiful wood devices, or, you know, or they have like legitimate countertops and things like that. Oh my heavens. Yes. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. It's absolutely amazing. I'll leave it at that. What you get with them, and or what you can buy with them if you so choose.
Yeah.
So anyway, but again, none of it's cheap. So after you've saved a few shekels and you're looking to kind of upgrade, you can go broke putting together a nice grill. But I will say this, and it's in its defense. I think I bought a bag of charcoal for $25, and I would have already spent, if I kept using, you know, conventional matchlight charcoal, I would have spent $40 now, and I'm only about halfway through the bag. Yeah, that's pretty.
And that
pretty crazy.
Testifies to the green eggs. Ability to hold heat and to be able to slow cook and control the temperatures about as well, if not better, than an oven. It's quite remarkable. And speaking of grills, when I was in there and there was a wood-fired outdoor pizza oven. I got a little boner looking at it.
What?
I love pizza. Oh, it's just so sexy. It was $2,200, and it wasn't a monster one like the one I had at the Frog at Lola's. But, yeah, very cool. Very cool. But it was very expensive. And you'd have to have it built in outside. You know, like a countertop, granite or concrete, and you'd have to have a little wood box for underneath the oven. Anyway, I digress. That's just
no. You know,
I thought what, I wanted to share it with.
It's interesting because what was I going to say? The egg comes with a pizza stone.
Yes.
And so.
Well, that's what Toby Snyder says. He says, I use my green egg to cook pizzas on. Every single thing that I do out there on the green egg, I can, you know, it's just one piece of equipment and, I can do pizzas. Anything, roast, And I thought, yeah, Max cooks his pizzas on. I said to him, yeah, Max cooks pizzas on his green egg. And he says, oh, they just kill it.
Yeah, they are. They are. They, you know, again, you got to learn how to do it and get that stone good and hot, you know, and, but once you do, it's pretty amazing. Here's another question. Hey, Mac, in terms of preparing vegetables, on the grill, is there things to stay away from? The one thing I've learned probably the most since listening to Kim is the use of indirect heat. And
yeah.
I now put most of my vegetables on that side, and I'm happy to say that I'm doing much better. Any other advice that he would give?
Yes. Asparagus on a grill, if they're little sticks, you have to, you can buy, these, things that clamp over half a dozen or a dozen pieces of asparagus that you can flip over. It has a handle on it. And otherwise use aluminum foil. They have these real thin, different sizes, you know, like maybe an inch height on, around the side. And you oil your asparagus, and then you can just throw it in there and let the indirect heat cook it.
Right.
Or that's something you can put right on the direct heat for a minute because it cooks real fast. But I like the big Chernobyl asparaguses, the ones that are half inch thick and round.
Right.
But that's just me. That's my preference. Some people like the delicate pencil sticks.
Well, when you cook the Chernobyl size, do you?
That you can put individually on the grill across the grates, and then you get the side of your spatula, and you just roll them all at once, so you can get an even cook on, you know, char on. Both sides. But if they're any smaller than that, I recommend putting them in the little foil container after you've oiled and peppered them or salted too.
Do you not like a little black, a little crisp on, from the grill on your asparagus? I like a little bit.
If it's big enough to put on the grates, yes, I do.
Okay.
Absolutely. But otherwise, my wife will come home with beautiful asparagus, but they're little pencil sticks. And so I pull out the foil pan, oil and pepper them, and then throw them on. And then when they come off, I get grated Parmesan cheese and sprinkle on them when they're still hot. And you're in the front row with those puppies.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what I would do with asparagus. But the fact that he's cooking indirect vegetables is brilliant. And that is exactly what you should be doing because, then you don't have to stand over him on heat because most grills are on high or medium high. Because you're cooking steaks and burgers. And then you have to stand right over. But if they're indirect, you could sit them over there and not worry about them getting black charcoal.
Got it. Here's another question for you. Mac, can we switch gears and talk about grilling fish? I'm a huge sea bass fan.
Yeah.
It is the best tasting fish I've ever eaten in my life. Does the chef have a recipe, maybe either a rub or a way of cooking it? Kim, it is. Chilean sea bass is to die for.
And it's a firm fish.
Yeah.
It's not like walleye, which is, or pike, which is flaky. As sea bass is flaky, but it's dense. It's denser and it's a richer fish and it stays together on the grill. The thing about sea bass is any fish you're cooking on the grill, it has to be at room temperature. You can put whatever your seasoning blend is. We were just talking about blackening. If that's what you want to try, or you can put just salt and pepper, and then cut lemon and lime to squeeze over. Or you can have a compound butter. To when you get it off, throw a little slab on top of the fish to give it a little sauce effect. But that you want to cook with across the grates, and you if it's got the skin on, you start with the skin side down, and so it sets up and firms up, and when the ends start getting a little brown and your spatula goes under easy without tearing the skin, because if it does that, it means it's pull the spatula out, it's still got to cook a little bit longer. And then as long as it's just white around the end, the edges, then you flip it over and gently, you don't flap it over, you flip it over. And because if you flip it over hard, it'll stick no matter what, how much oil it's on the fish. And oil your grates before you put the fish on. Okay, you just got to get that little high pro glow on the grate where it's kind of shiny. I mean, you don't want to, you know, pour it on. You just have a rag. I use old T-shirts or dishcloths, and I'll pour some olive oil, or you can use vegetable oil, whatever you want, on the rag, and then have your oven glove on. And then you wipe that down the grates before you put your fish on, or your steaks for that matter. But make sure that the fish is at room temperature, whatever seasoning you like. You know, you might like garlic salt or garlic powder, onion salt or onion powder, and mix it with other things.
Hey, let me ask you a question. A lot of people use just a metal scraper. I know I do.
Yeah.
It's hanging next to my grill. I use a metal scraper to scrape off, you know, whatever steak residue. And 'cause I'm a charcoal griller, and as soon as I'm done, I shut my grill, you know, through oxygen, I shut it off, or I get it turned off. Why do you use a glove as opposed to a scraper? Is there any reason?
Well, because if you're holding a cloth with oil on it,
yeah,
and you don't have something over your hand, you're gonna burn the shit out of your hand.
Well, don't give me the dumbass answer. No kidding. I'm the glove.
I'm telling you. You can use a scraper. I have a copper brush. I have a copper, it's an industrial one that I used at the restaurant. It's got a scraper on one side and then these copper bristles on the other.
Right, I have
and
that.
I run that down my grates before I do anything. And after I'm done, I have my gas grill up to high, back up to high, and for 10 minutes, and then I'll turn them off. And I'll scrape the grill and then, wipe it off with a rag and oil.
Okay. So I do the same thing.
It for the next trip.
Okay. All right. I was imagining that you have this glove on that you scrape with. The glove scrapes, but you essentially, okay. I didn't know if there's a reason why you use the glove scraper. You were dancing near the edge on that one, just so you know.
Oh, thank you.
just so you know.
I love dancing on the edge with you.
And if I weren't being happy boy today, I would have like come unglued. I put the glove on because I don't want to burn my hand. I thought, did I just hear that right?
Well, I have a rag, and I rub the oil on the grates, but I use a scraper that has about an 18-inch handle on it, so I can bear down on the grates.
Right.
I don't use one of these little things that has a 6-inch handle on it. I have a big industrial scraper, and the bristles, I still have the scraper, and I've had it for 4 years, and it's great.
Pardon the pun. It's great. I do the same thing and use olive oil, pour it on on a rag that I keep on the grill and then go ahead and make sure that I don't have an issue with anything sticking to it, but I thought the glove thing was something that it's not. Here's another interesting question about garlic for you. Mac, I'm a huge fan of garlic. And yeah. I might as well admit, yes, I am from the chosen land. I am Italian. What forms of garlic does Kim Keek keep for cooking? I have cloves. I have minced garlic that comes in a jar and is wet.
Yeah.
Is there any other forms of garlic that Kim uses when he cooks that he could recommend to me? Interesting.
Well, what I do is I will dice fresh garlic. I will caramelize garlic cloves. I will take garlic. I don't like stuff in the jar because it's got a preservative in it.
Oh.
To keep it fresh and keep it from turning brown. So what I do is today you can buy peeled garlic cloves. And the peeled garlic cloves you can put in a blender and add some olive oil and you make up your own paste. And you keep it in a plastic container with a lid or glass jar with a lid to keep in your refrigerator for up to 2 weeks. But a week would be sufficient. But we take a gallon of peeled garlic cloves and we put it in the Cuisinart, not all of it, we do it in batches, and then in the olive oil. Now, what I do when I get a gallon, and if you do, and you just want garlic cloves fresh, and you don't want to puree them, you add olive oil to that jar with the whole cloves, and that will keep them fresh. And then, when you use those garlic cloves, when they're all used up, you have garlic olive oil to use. So, you get two uses out of that. I had to think of everything to use every bit I could. But I don't recommend buying chopped garlic in a container. I think you should make your own.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Because that's pretty popular. You know, not too many refrigerators that you don't open up where you open up and you don't see some type of minced, what do you call it? Is it minced garlic?
Minced garlic, yes, that's what they call it. But you can do it yourself, and it's a better product because you don't have any preservatives to keep the garlic from turning brown.
Right.
That's all. And if you keep it in the fridge, it won't turn brown. And the olive oil, you can use... if you puree it with olive oil, then that's fine. That's how it comes in the grocery store in jars. But they have to put a preservative in there because it's just to keep it fresh looking. But if you're serious, the garlic guy, and you're Italian, you damn well better be serious about it.
You could hence his interest.
Yeah, I worked in Italy for a year, so I'm well versed in garlic. And if I don't know if you know this, but you take a garlic clove, and where it's the bulb, the whole clove's a bulb of clove, and you cut it off at the root there, about a quarter of an inch down. You can put that in a wrap it in foil and put a little olive oil on there, throw it in your oven or throw it on your grill, and then when it's done, you have this one side end of the garlic that's cut, and the clove, the garlic just pops out of the clove, and then you have roasted garlic. And the longer you let it do, you can spread it. I spread it on toast,
yeah,
or a baguette. Oh God, I'm in the front row. it's really cool way to have garlic. And when we did our garlic mashed potatoes at Sanders, we took these cloves, whole cloves, and we put it in a olive oil, about a quarter of an inch of olive oil. And of course you're talking about the two dozen cloves.
Right.
And we cooked those over medium heat, stirred them occasionally until they were brown and soft. And then we blended them and mixed them in with our mashed potatoes to get perfect garlic mashed potatoes. So you might want to try that sometime. It's a hell of a preparation for it. Yeah, well, I used it at Sanders for 30 years, and I always added cream cheese a little bit and a little cream and maybe a wee bit of sour cream, too. But that's why you loved our garlic mashed potatoes.
That's a fact, yeah. That is a straight fact. Here's an email about wild game. Hey, Mac. We discuss with Kim mostly domestic meats. I hunt waterfowl, pheasants, turkey, and large game deer, elk, etc. What does he like, and how might he prepare a wild dish? Thanks. Truth be told, Kim has thrown a few wild game extravaganzas in his life. Yes?
Yes, I have.
All right. Is there any secret? Is there any?
Well, for me, wild game, you know, if it's elk, I was living in Montana, when I got back from Europe, and, this friend of mine came in the house with fresh elk liver, and he said, "Here, this is fresh. Just got it today. Drop it in buttermilk overnight, and then cook liver and onions." And I swear to God, it's the best liver and onions I've ever had. I mean, it put me right in the front row. And with game, you might want to, marinate it, like with duck. For our roast caraway duck, we, dress the night before. We, rub caraway and salt inside the cavity on the outside. Then we, put it in the oven real hot, like 500 degrees for about a half an hour to an hour, and it's on a raised rack, and all the juices, the duck has a lot of fat, and you want to render that, and then to turn the oven down to 250 from 500, and in 2 hours. And the skin will be crisp, the meat will be tender, and you eat half a duck. It's how we serve the half a duck. And we got 2.5-3 pound ducks, and that's what we did. And we didn't sauce it. We served it with sweet and sour red cabbage and spatzle, which is a European kind of like a dumpling that you make a batter, and then you grate it. There's a spatzle maker that you just pour it in, and you run the grate back and forth over boiling water, and it forms these little dumplings, and then you take them out, and you can, you drain them, and then, you can saute them with butter and onion, and then drop a little cheese on it before you serve it. But, yeah, the duck is one way. I've had duck with an orange sauce. Now, you can, you have to baste that duck. Well, both ducks you baste after the first half hour. But, you know, and then you use Grand Marnier and flame that at the end. And you stuff oranges in the cavity, sliced oranges. They're sliced or quartered oranges and some garlic. Very good way to do it. As far as deer, venison,
yeah, let me ask you a specific question because, you know, I, you know, Kim and I being on the radio all the time, talking cooking, and during my time when I lived up there, I had an extremely popular radio show, extremely popular with farmers who go out and hunt. And I would routinely get calls, "Hey Mac, you know, I've got my grandpa's, you know, blood sausage that he made. It's the best. Do you want some?" I'm like, and I would always say, "Look, that stuff's going to suck." And I would straight up
insult you.
Excuse me. I would straight up insult them. And that only made them bring more of it by. And on occasion, yeah, I would try to cook it. But to me, it was still so gamey. What is the secret in making wild game? And now we're going to talk, you know, venison. We're going to talk deer and whatnot. What's the secret to making it less gamey?
Well, sometimes you might want to brine it in salt and sugar water
to pull
out any gamey flavor.
Okay.
Let me
ask you this. I've also, my father-in-law used to do it in milk.
Yeah, well, any game, deer, elk, that kind of game, yes, doing buttermilk or milk is a great way to pull the gaminess out of any wild game. Okay? It works wonders. And I can testify, I've cooked, venison, I've cooked, ostrich before at the restaurant.
Ostrich?
Ostrich.
Is that legal?
Well, yeah, they have, emu farms. And a guy used to raise them back in the, 80s, and he would bring in, he couldn't sell it. And it's like eating buffalo. It's as lean a meat as you could possibly eat. There's absolutely no fat. You have to cook it high and hot and quickly. You don't want to overcook it. It's got to be eaten rare to medium rare. It's got its own flavor. You don't have to soak it in anything. It's just very clean. And, you know, but yeah, it's just, I mean, you should never be afraid to try stuff, but if, and sometimes with game, what makes it tough is overcooking. And so, with the exception of duck, which cooks for 3.5 hours, at least that's what we did, 2.5 to 3.5 hours, depending on the size of the duck. But that's just hot, and then you have to render all that fat from the duck.
Hey, what, yeah. when you say render fat, what does that mean?
That means by cooking it for a long time, the fat comes out. It's sitting on a rack, and you look in the bottom of the pan underneath the rack, and you'll see a pool of fat because duck has a lot of fat, and the skin is about 1/4 inch thick with fat under this outer skin.
Got it. Okay. All right. So, let me ask you about. So let's talk about. Deer and elk. Are there any is there a way that you like to prepare it? Did you skew more towards preparing that with a barbecue sauce, with a rub? Is there any way that you kind of defaulted to that?
I never cooked unless it's buffalo ribs use barbecue sauce, but I always liked to salt and pepper or put a rub on it. And sometimes you can, depending on the cut of the meat, you chop it up and make like an elk stew, like you would a beef stew.
Right.
The same way. So it depends on the cut. And an elk tenderloin or a deer tenderloin, you want to eat like a filet mignon. Okay.
What does that mean? Do you want to eat like a filet mignon?
Well, it looks like a tenderloin. It, you know, the long, I used to call them beef dicks. When I did a party where I cooked the whole tenderloin, 7.5 pounds, and I brown it lightly, and then I throw it in the off-the-sham, the slow cooker, to just hold, and then I slice it like a loaf of bread, or if I'm doing a buffet and they want it cold, then I'd refrigerate it overnight, and then I'd put it in the meat slicer, and then I'd slice it thin, 1/8 inch thick, and then I'd put it back together so it looked like a whole tenderloin, and then people can just take the piece or two or four, with a serving fork, and that's what a filet mignon comes from, is the tenderloin. That's the cut of meat.
Got it. All right.
Okay.
All right.
And but elk or deer venison, absolutely, that's how you want to eat those.
Okay. All right. The How about if you were going to make a sauce, if you were going to sauce them up, is there a way? Because you did that with your buffalo ribs, right?
Yeah, I barbecued the buffalo ribs. What I did with the buffalo ribs, because that's something that, it depends on, like pork ribs. You know, you just can't cook them quick and eat them. You got to cook them for a while. Well, I didn't have time, so what I did was I put our hot rub seasoning, similar, not a blackened seasoning, but just a lot of cayenne and pepper and salt and a little sugar, and I'd marinate those overnight. And not marinate them, but I just put them in the fridge with the rub on them and let that soak into the ribs, and then I'd take them out and I'd stand them up on the end, on its edge, side by side, fill up my pan. I'd cook 30, 40 pounds at a time, so it depends on how many buffalo ribs you're cooking. And a rack is, could be as long as 18 inches, a full rack, 12 to 18 inches. So, and then I would put water over them, and I'd cover it with aluminum foil, and I would boil them and put them in the oven for an hour and a half, and then they'd be just fall off the bone tender, and then that's when I would sauce them and put them in the smoker, the Alt-O-Sham, our slow cooker, and I would cook those, and then, when we got an order, you throw it on the grill at the last minute. And you don't, they're cooked, so all you want to do is score the meat and, to give it that flavor of the grill. So, that's one way you can do any kind of rib. Pork rib, the same way. So you're not spending all day, checking your grill. Now, purists would call bullshit on that method, but, I'm not in a competition, for rib cooking, which takes anywhere from 5 to 8 hours to cook good ribs.
Why would they call bullshit on it? I'm confused. I don't understand.
Yeah, because a true barbecue aficionado who's in competition.
Right, all that. Whatever.
And that, it's a different set of standards. And I'm not competing. I'm feeding.
Right. The only thing you were doing was trying to make money, when trying to make it taste good and trying to make money.
Yeah, I had to make a living. But also, too. I wanted to taste good. And most people freaked out. And I don't know if it was the barbecue sauce, but I finished it the same. I took them and I put them in our Alt-O-Sham. We have a smoker unit on it. And I smoked them. And then I refrigerated and put them in the, refrigerated them after I smoked them.
Right.
And I smoked them for an hour and a half. And so all I did was, when it came out, when I used it, an order came in, I lathered it up with sauce, put it on the grill, and then it was superb. I mean, that's just the way I did it. I don't have a monster smoker where I can keep throwing ribs in and stoking the coals or the wood. That's an incredible way to do it. And that's when you go to a barbecue joint, that's how they do it. But, they have brisket and all that stuff. That's another piece of tough meat that takes 12 to 14 hours to cook that is spectacular to eat.
I went to a brisket place. Yeah. I went to a brisket place with Patrick last Sunday. And, should I get a lot of fat on the meat when it's served to me?
Yeah.
I should?
Yes, you do. You say you want the fatty end or the lean end. A lot of people like that fat, and they'll just wolf it down. They don't eat around it. Or the leaner end, because it's shaped kind of like, the fat end's at the biggest part of the brisket, and then it tapers off. And the leaner end is down towards the skinnier end. But by cooking it so long, the fat goes through the meat, and that's what tenderizes the meat, and that's why it's low, low and slow for 12, 14 hours. That's how it's done. Yeah. Yeah, people like the fat. Myself being included.
Well, you know what? So do I, but there was a lot of it. I was actually surprised at the amount. And I thought, well, I've never been to a straight up brisket place. Maybe I'm the hick in here. Maybe it's me that doesn't know what's going on, what they do here.
Well, then you ask them the next time if you go in that you want a leaner, the lean end.
Got it.
It's still going to be fatty. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
It won't have as much fat. And you have to specify. All right?
Yep. Another question for you. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. When you're leaning out wild game, is there a way to do it so you don't get as much fat into the fire? Could he explain the process a little bit more?
What's the question again?
It sounds like they've never done it. So the question is, when you're leaning out wild game, okay?
Yeah.
You used a very specific term.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you do it?
How do you deal with all that fat without creating a huge fire issue and scorching the beef?
Well, that's something you have to throw on the heat, right? Direct heat.
Yeah.
And then you flip it over to indirect heat, and then the flat of the fat will still render itself, but it won't fall right on the, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Then it won't fall, on the flames. It'll just fall below and, go into your, drip pan. But, you can't cook it all the way through if it's a very fatty piece of meat on the direct heat.
Okay. So you're essentially doing the same thing. You're essentially just, you're just searing the outside and then you're going to move it to indirect heat but you're going to slow cook it. And if you're going to slow cook it, how are you going to
take longer. Going to take longer.
Got it. How do you sear it at a lower temperature?
You don't.
Oh.
You sear it on the high heat, and you're still going to get a little flame up, but you want to get those grill marks, and if it's a really, really fat piece of meat,
right,
you just cook it all on the indirect heat, you start with all the burners on high, and then, after they're full heat, then you turn the burners off that you're not going to use, and then you turn the other burner down to the temperature you want. There you go. You got the two burners that are off and the one burner that's cranking, and you throw the meat on as you turn the two burners off, and that'll sear it a little bit, but it might flame a little bit, but burners will be out. It'll go down. And then the hot burner, you turn to the temperature you want to cook it, but it's going to have to be probably 2-3 hours at a 250.
Okay.
275.
Okay, so, but the bottom line is you're not going to sear it on the outside because of the low heat. It's simply not going to happen.
No.
Okay. All right. One final email. I kept you a long time today, and.
Thank you.
No. The, Mac, I'm curious about his buffalo ribs. In my head, I have this Buffalo Wild Wing thing. He's talking about full-size ribs, isn't he, Kim?
Yes, I'm talking about buffalo ribs that are this, I call them brontosaurus ribs. They're humongous, but it's a beef, you know, it's buffalo meat, and Buffalo Wild Wings deal in chicken wings. But a buffalo rib is the real deal, and they're humongous, and you put your rub on and you put it in the fridge and overnight, and then do what I said earlier. And that's the difference, yeah. But
if you serve me buffalo ribs and beef ribs, will I know the difference? Will I notice the difference?
Yeah, the beef rib will be leaner. There's not a lot of fat on buffalo. And the beef rib, excuse me, will be fattier. They'll be fattier than the buffalo ribs. The very lean, lean meat. And it's very healthy to eat. And the rarer you eat the buffalo meat, like a filet, the better it is. Medium rare at the most. Don't go past medium rare.
Got it. I wrote that down. Don't go past medium rare.
Yeah. And otherwise, you got shoe leather.
But if you put two plates next to me, I would be able to tell there'd be by the fat content. Would I think they're both from the cow? Would I notice that? Would I say this one seems to taste different if I was eating buffalo?
Yes, it does.
It does.
Because it's a leaner, less fatty meat, and the flavor is different than a beef rib.
Okay.
And you would notice the difference because of just the fact that there is more fat, and it has a little richer flavor because of the fat. And buffalo is a leaner, much leaner meat. And you'd notice that too. I truly believe that, Mac.
My guest has been today has been the chef of Almarine Radio, and we've been just one talking about happiness, and then after we're talking about staying active and really being involved in groups and meeting people. And to that end, I want to kind of close with this email. I listened with curiosity, as I am retired, to your discussion earlier today about being happy. When I first retired, I spent a lot of time by myself. It probably was the most unhappy time of my entire retirement. I did not enjoy it. I did not interact with a lot of people. But the things I had known in my life, work, going out for drinks after work, playing golf with people I worked with, were gone now. I had to go out and recreate those groups and those relationships. And you mentioned something that I did that has led to other things. Being a veteran, Mac, I did join both the American Legion and the VFW. I'm a Vietnam guy. I met guys there. I play golf with them now. One of them likes to hike, so he and I will hike together. So those social relationships spawned fitness relationships that are important to me. What's really cool is on days I don't want to go, I'll get the phone call. Come on, man, grab your shoes and hit the door. And I go. It's very powerful, those social bonds. Two, I began to volunteer. Meals on Wheels. That's right. Didn't know anything about it other than the fact that it existed. I've got a car. I can drive, I can help. I started out doing that. Because of some leadership abilities I have, I now run a little bit of an area. Other people volunteer, and I coordinate it, as well as I deliver myself if I have to. It's been absolutely wonderful, not only meeting other people that volunteer, but also the people that we serve during Meals on Wheels. So I think I would echo and reinforce things that you both said. Get out of the house, get off your ass, and that article you read, Mac, at the start of the segment that said, happiness isn't about what you accumulate, essentially, but it's about the relationships you have. That is spot on. You will live a great life if you are great and have full relationships. If you simply have accumulated a lot of things, your life will be empty as all shit, and you will be sad and lonely. So, grab your shoes, get on the internet, find things to volunteer, go down and have coffee, join the VFW, join the Legion, or any other damn fraternal organization, and get out there and start living life.
Way to go. That's a great, great email.
You know what? That's pretty cool, and pretty cool because, it's a bit of an art. Our lives today are much different. Much different than I think the way we grew up. And I think you default into, I'll just keep doing the things that I've always done. But that kind of spins you into a lonely orbit. And I think it does take effort to open up the door, to walk out the door, to get back involved, and then to extend yourself. But it's certainly the better way and the path towards a fuller life. And you know, to me, the other big thing is it's when you talk about post-combat related mental health, you know, that's where the demons come in, loneliness and isolation. The demons tend to be warded off by torches and relationships. Where the sun is, the demons don't show up. And I believe that. So anyway, all right, your other phone's ringing. You should go answer. Oh, Miss B's there. Never mind. All right, any parting words before I let you go?
Happy weekend, everyone. The weather's getting nice all over this beautiful country. And get out. Life's the garden, folks. Dig it.
Life's the garden. Dig it. All right, bud. Thanks for the visit.
All right. Have a good weekend, Matt.
There is the one and only, Kim Holmes, the Almarine Radio Head Show. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Finish up on a Friday, a happy Friday. We're doing happy stuff. So, So don't try to get in there and do anything crazy, all right? More of Almarine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Thanks to the chef for coming on. The top five stories in the early bird today. No, I didn't get to these. But number one, Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy calls it quits. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, here's the... the top enlisted sailor in the Navy, after all this craziness about harassment, about hazing, you know, he steps down. Wow. All right, and don't think you've heard the last of that story either. Right, there's all kinds of people making all kinds of phone calls to get somebody to go on the record anonymously. It won't matter to go on the record anonymously, and to talk about what was going on there. So that's number one story in the early bird today. Number two. Up to 20,000 migrant kids can be sent to military bases. You know, but the bottom line is this. I mean, if you're paying attention to the story, if you're going to reunite the families with the parents, with the kids, right? The parents with the kids, you're going to reunite the family. So the parents are being held. Okay. So the kids can only be held for 20 days. So where does that leave you? Is catch and release the only thing you can do? And so I would say before the close of business today, you're going to have a judge, I want to say, who's in the Ninth Circuit someplace, and I believe she is going to be asked to reconsider her ruling to give the federal government relief
in this situation that they find themselves in that legally the only legal thing that you can do in our country is to catch and release these people, knowing that 97% of them won't return. You have to provide me relief from that, because you've essentially legalized a way for people to come into this country, right? And so what I'll do is I'll spend 20 days trying to validate that this is a family. Do you have birth certificates? No, we didn't bring them. What do I do? Do I run DNA tests? Maybe I hire 23andMe. What is that? Is that what it is? That company? Maybe I hire that company to go ahead and to screen these people. Yeah, they're not biologically related. Sorry, you're out. You guys are all going home. You're not related. So, little kid, you're getting deported. You're getting prosecuted. Whatever. That's the top story. That's the number two story. Number three, the withheld HHS study on base water contaminants is out, and it's not good. You know, there's part of me that doesn't want to read this because it's disgusting. The government released Thursday an in-depth look, its first, at the health risks created by chemical compounds found in hundreds of military water sources and what illnesses may be linked to even minimal exposure to them. The bottom line, the man-made chemical compounds found in military firefighting foam, commonly known as PFOS and PFOA, perfluoroctane sulfonate and perfluoroctane acid, commonly known as PFOS, not to be confused with POS, and PFOA, are hardy toxic chemicals that do not degrade in soil or water and can be absorbed by humans through drinking water or through air or the soil. The compounds even get to fetuses. The study reported the chemicals have been found in umbilical cords and in human breast milk. In people, the study found that exposure could be associated with pregnancy complications, thyroid issues, liver damage, asthma, decreased responsiveness to vaccines, decreased fertility, kidney, and testicular cancer. Yeah. If you recall the Camp Lejeune water thing, the settlement reached in that is absolutely positively amazing. And one of the considerations was that the damages had to be controlled, and what you admitted to had to be controlled, because the number of people that have gone through that bases, those bases, and the health risk to them, if the government starts paying for that, the VA will be broke. The VA and its gigantic budget, yeah, it'll be broke. That's so now you're talking about not just one Camp Lejeune. Talking about them all over the country, depending on this study and what they assess as to be, what they believe to be the scope of those affected. Number four, Russia warns of tough response to the creation of a U.S. Space Force. Kind of interesting. Russia, how do we know they're lying? They're breathing, okay? Oh, yeah. I thought I was going to say their lips are moving. But it's even worse than that. So Russia is racing to the Arctic to militarize it, okay, in case you didn't know that. Oh, but the United States, if we go into space, militarize space, oh, what, because we did it before they did it? Memo to the Russians, shut up already, man. Shut up. Just pray to God your soccer event doesn't go upside down and something crazy happened there. Number five, second woman on track to graduate the Marine Corps Infantry Officer Course may be your next recon platoon commander. Remember when I said I didn't particularly care for headline writers? Because they tend to be sensationalists and liars. In another historic milestone for female Marines, another woman is on track to graduate from the Marine Corps' grueling, McNamara's comment, although less grueling, and arduous, although less arduous than it used to be, 13-week infantry officer course. Tomorrow, she's pushing for a job that could put her in charge of the Corps' elite reconnaissance Marines. Only one woman has thus far successfully completed the course and got on to don the occupational field of 0302, an infantry officer. She's currently serving as the only female infantry platoon commander. The infantry officer course 3TAC-18, which is the third class of fiscal year 2018, set to graduate tomorrow, currently has one female Marine officer enrolled. The Marine is attempting to obtain the military occupational specialty of 0203, a ground intelligence officer. The 0203 field can be a pathway to becoming a scout sniper or reconnaissance platoon commander. Ground intel officers can serve as platoon commanders. No woman has yet attempted to becoming a reconnaissance Marine. And then it goes on, blah, 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 blah. So here's my point about the article. So you read the headline. Oh, wow. It's pretty substantial. Okay? You read the article. She's never said that that's the direction she wants to go. It's complete hypothesis on the part of the writer, Sean Snow, which allows the headline writer to fantasize as well, which to me, I don't know, I find stupid. Because let me just tell you, if you think the infantry officer course is tough, go through the training to lead reconnaissance Marines. Yeah. It only goes up. But anytime you see the Marine Corps Infantry Officer course in the news, it's because it has been a lightning rod over the course of the last few years. And some of it, I will tell you, is appropriate. Okay? Because the Marine Corps, this is my opinion, reading the tea leaves and watching what's been done, they could not justify some of the requirements of the course. For instance, on day one, you run a combat endurance test. Okay? That includes a double running of the obstacle course. You go through it the second time. And the single point of failure was getting up the rope the second time. And it washed out a lot of male Marines and female Marines. So what's the point of that? And what's the point of having it pass-fail on the first day of class? Can somebody not work with me so that by the end of the course I can do it? Why is it a pass-fail on day one? That's a pretty drastic consequence. Yep. Yeah, it is. So what's the point? So I think at the end of the day, the Marine Corps looked at some of the things that were done there and said, I can't defend this. The Commandant said, I can't defend that in front of the Senator of the House Armed Service Committee. Okay. And so tweaks have been made. The article goes on. Now, does that mean the standards have been lowered? The Marine Corps will say no. Infantry officers will say yes. It's been made easier. Of course the standards were lower. Okay. The rebuttal to that is the standards were unreasonably high and in some cases arbitrarily high. They serve no other purpose. So in light of that, standards were adjusted. The article goes on. Marine Corps officials have made recent tweaks to the course, including removing the combat endurance test as a graduation requirement, and the Corps reduced the number of evaluated hikes to graduate to 3, though poor performance in any of these events can ultimately impact final evaluations. Previously, candidates were evaluated on 5 out of 9 hikes. I don't even get that. You know, when I taught there, when I went through there, everything you did, you were evaluated. I cannot imagine falling out of, you know. So let me paint a picture for you. So you run the combat endurance course, okay? And you struggle with it, and ultimately you fail it, okay? But you're not kicked out anymore. Got it? McNamara stays in the course, okay? We're all happy about that, especially McNamara. I don't want to get washed out. McNamara drops out of the next hike. How does that work? Is everybody okay with that? Okay. And now McNamara makes the next hike, drops out of the next one. So that's, so far, in 3 out of 4 evaluated physical events, I've dropped out. Hikes, blah, blah, blah. Is that a trend? Yeah. Now, one of two things have to happen. Either I'm there's a reason and they can overcome it, or they look at me and they say, look, for whatever reason, you don't want to maintain your body in a state that allows you to do this work, so we're going to send you home. We're going to send you to another school. You're going to fail. Everything was evaluated. And so I don't get, like, only selective events are evaluated. I don't understand that. The Marine Corps argued the changes better align with the Corps' infantry training and equipment manual. Officers attending IOC still need to complete all 9 hikes. So you need to complete them, but you only need to complete 3 in the appropriate time. You can straggle. Come on, man. I don't get that. 3 female officers entered IOC class that kicked the IOC class. They kicked off sometime in April. 2 did not make it to the end. In total, about 30 Marines were attrited. That's a verb in the Marine Corps. Since the start of the course, according to Pena. So that means 28 males and 2 females dropped out of the class. It's not easy. Anyway, so that's in the early bird. And because Stars and Stripes break so much news, that tends to not, you tend to not read. Again, the suicide thing, right? The suicide thing, still haven't seen that, right? Still haven't seen that article. So it's kind of interesting. Top stories in Stars and Stripes as we get ready to get out the door. Navy's hospital ships will remain afloat despite talks of scrapping one to cut costs. 2 of them you've heard of, all right? The USS, the USNS Mercy and the USNS Comfort. Next headline. Taliban resume efforts to halt elections after end of the year ceasefire. Here's another story that you haven't seen. The Trump administration is considering a plan to use Coast Guard money to pay for border enforcement. There's a follow-up story. There's a follow-up story in Stars and Stripes about the McPawn. So let me just get to that real quick, and then I'll let you go. Navy misconduct investigation continues as top enlisted sailor retires. The Navy said it would complete its investigation into the Master Chief Petty Officer of the Navy, Stephen Giordano, after he announced Thursday that he would retire. Amid the probe into allegations, he fostered a hostile work environment in his Pentagon office. The investigation was initiated last month after a formal complaint by a sailor working for Giordano. The sailor alleged that Giordano created a toxic work environment, belittled people who worked for him, and often demanded that they perform menial tasks, although menial task isn't defined in that paragraph. Wow. Seriously, you're at the top. You've risen to the top. And let me tell you, if it was some just bullshit claim, trust me, he would not have stepped down. So, this smoke evidently has fire to go with it. Here's another email. Mac, I don't know that you finished your thought this morning. Yeah, I'm not going to finish that thought. No, it's a serious but bad thought about the as I was reading yesterday. Actually, what happened was after the show ends, right? I take the audio and I put it on the website, and then I write a little bit, a little paragraph about what's in each segment. Then I'll take it and I'll put it. I pump it out on social media. So as I'm doing that, I'm looking for pictures of the officers involved in the Fitzgerald's collision, because that's what the story, that's what hour one was about yesterday. But I can't find any of them. Now, they used to be on the internet, because I know I saw them. But I can't find one of them. Not one headshot, Navy photograph of Lieutenant J.G. Sarakopic, not one photograph of Lieutenant Natalie Combs, and I found a picture of Lieutenant by the name of Iron, like Brian, but it's Iron Woodley, prior enlisted, LDO. He was running the surface plot that night in CIC. Lieutenant Combs was in charge of CIC, and Lieutenant J.G. Kopic was the officer of the day. Okay, so as I went to look for pictures, I couldn't find any of them. And I had seen them before. And I thought, so did somebody remove, like, official Navy pictures? Like, are they being protected? Because I will tell you what, when there's a Marine Corps court-martial, there's pictures of everybody everywhere. But I'm looking, and I looked probably for close to 3 hours. I kid you not. For probably close to 3 hours, I looked, and I couldn't find any. I found one picture of Lieutenant Woodley. And him in Quantico, of all places. I found one picture, and again, it wasn't in any, not in any of the stories. It was in a blog or something. And it was an old picture of Lieutenant Combs as Lieutenant J.G. On a ship. But you know the headshot of you in your dress blue uniforms or you in your alphas? That headshot, your official picture? There's none of that. And there used to be on the internet. And so it got me to thinking, like, this is like, I was really uncomfortable before with, in none of the stories that you'll see will you see their pictures. Go and look at the stories about Hadithas and those court-martials. There's pictures of those guys everywhere. So is the Navy protecting Is the Navy protecting these officers? And the genesis of the first hour was, are they being held to a lower standard because you don't want to get on the wrong side of the gender issue? And did that foster an environment in which sailors got killed? And so the thing that bothers me, along with there's no pictures of these people anywhere, is that they NJP'd the officer of the deck. And again, if you listen to the program, you've heard me say, that seven people got killed, and she got the same punishment that somebody who stole a pack of razors from the PX would get. She went to the same, through the same criminal proceedings, not a court-martial. So to me, something's rotten there. Something's rotten there, and by making plea deals, you assure that, you know, defense attorneys and prosecutors are not going to get after it in public where this would come to light. So I don't know. I'm uneasy with that, and that's the thought. I don't know that anything. I don't know that both of them could have been, you know, stellar officers, but I would say this. To drive a ship into another ship in the way that they did it, in my opinion, is criminally negligent. Now, I know the Navy says, well, we can't prove that, or blah, blah, blah. What are you doing in the Combat Information Center where you're supposed to be tracking ships, knowing that tonight the biggest thing that's going on tonight is we're gonna cross a worldwide shipping lane that goes into Japan, and we're a day out of Japan. So there's probably a fair amount of traffic there. That's the biggest thing that we're going to do tonight. Other than that, it's probably going to be another boring night of surface plots and watching what's going on, okay? And we'll do it because that's what we do. But transiting the shipping lane, we're all over that. Except they weren't. They weren't all over it on the bridge. They weren't all over it in CIC. The report is quoted as saying there was lookouts on the starboard side of the ship, but none on the port side. And so, but even that, you know, if you're on the port side. The port side wing, how do you not see a ship, okay? It's not blocked. I mean, for instance, you might not see it if it's at, so just imagine this. The direction of movement is 12 o'clock, okay? You're standing at 3 o'clock. There's a ship between you and 9 o'clock, obviously, okay? But that's when it hits you. Before it hits you, even if you're on the right side, for the ship, you can see it. You can see it's coming close. So even those answers, you know, don't ring true to me. So is somebody being protected and all that? I mean, it certainly sounds like it is to me. It certainly sounds like it is to me. And so if she's the officer of the deck and she knows we only have lookouts on one side of the ship, why don't we have lookouts on the other side of the ship? That's her responsibility. The combat information isn't saying anything to her. Okay? And that's acceptable to her? Hey, we just had a ship come within 1,000 meters of us. I got nothing from you. Talk to me. What's going on down there? That's your job. And again, I've already talked ad nauseum about the systems, you know, the systems and the training. You never go anywhere where 100% of your systems are up. You never go anywhere where 100% of your people are up. That's why we have leaders there. That's why we have officers, and that's why we have senior enlisted leaders there. Because their job. Here's the question. Why the hell was the CO or the XO not on the bridge that night? Good question. So to me, that says the CO had confidence in Lieutenant Kopic, Lieutenant J.G. Kopic. Because let me tell you, if I'm running the ship and I look and I come around the corner and I see the watch bill and I see Kopic and she's a shitbird, either me or the XO is going to be up drinking coffee for a while. Okay? Go in, get a few hours of sleep, set your alarm, wake up, grab a cup of coffee, walk out, take something to read, sit on the bridge, and watch her do her thing. And intervene when appropriate. That's how you do it. So, to me, if you look at what she did, if you look at him going to sleep, that tells me that he had confidence in her. And he looked at the watch bill. Okay, who's down in CIC? Combs. Oh, well, that's good. We're all right. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. I haven't seen an explanation of how this thing happened that makes sense to me. So, and the contention of what started all this yesterday was something that they got mailed to these guys that run a website that said the Navy's covering up for these women who were subpar performers in the same way. And then they drew the parallel between what the Navy passed an F-14 female fighter pilot. And then in scrutiny of the record, what was discovered that were she a male, she would have been failed. But nobody wanted to do that. Okay? That stuff ain't right. It's not right. It's not, first of all, it's not fair to her. Right? Her desire is to serve. If you want to be a pilot, she's dead. You think that's too tall a price to pay, you know, for saying no? Nobody else died. None of the evaluators died. She died. She paid with her life for their negligence. Is the same thing going on here? And it goes, and to take it back to IOC, the standard should be the standard. IOC standards had to be lowered because they were considered a bit arbitrary. Okay? They could not be linked to training standards. Okay, I got it. I do have some heartburn with only if so all the, those other hikes are standardized hikes. Yes? Yes. And you can drop out of 3 of the 9? You cannot finish them on time, 3 of the 9, and that's okay? I don't understand how in the Marine Corps, in the United States Marine Corps, that is like, that's, we're okay with it. So, be that as it may, this is supposed to be happy day. So, hope you have a happy weekend. Join an organization or two or three. Yeah, do it today. So you can be happy. Don't be a shut-in. And if you know shut-ins, get after them. It's like, come on, man. We got to get into it. Because let me tell you what. This is something Sebastian Younger told me. He goes, Mac, you veterans, you guys are now, because you can, because of the internet, you got your own radio station. You communicate with each other on social media, and you don't want to deal with us. And I said, yeah, we don't like you. You don't like us. You don't accept us. We need you, though. Yeah, but you don't like us. You live in a world without consequences. We don't share your values. Get out there and preach the gospel of inclusion, of getting out there and being part of life and not staying at home. So do that. That's an order. That's an All Marine Radio order. I used to watch The Voice all the time. Pharrell was on it. He's a pretty cool dude, man. I'm not going to lie to you. He's a cool guy. Just watching him do what he does. Yeah, he seems to be pretty cool. So, you know, but all kidding aside, I think it's, I think it is, with the internet, with your cell phone, and I don't know that age probably plays some role in it, but I think it's just as easy, people at any age, to get walled off. And if you look at that statistic, right, over 7,000 veterans and active duty service members take their lives on an annual basis. That's more than 17 years of war in Afghanistan and however long we were in Iraq. That's more than that. On an annual basis, suicide. Yeah, that's brutal. So, and a big part of it is that isolation piece. Social interaction causes a lot of good stuff. And I don't think there's anything that helps veterans, and I will use the, what's the organization? Marine started, just got a big award. T-Mobile sponsors them. They were on the Super Bowl. They do humanitarian aid. What is, for whatever reason, the word unicorn. Team Rubicon. It looks like unicorn. Yeah, that's the whole premise behind Team Rubicon. And that premise is, hey, look, you know, you've lived a purpose-driven life. Join us and you'll find purpose with us. We'll take you to places that desperately need you. And I think that that's absolutely positively important in people's lives. And I think, you know, again, most veterans have that in them. They've been leaders. And their leadership, their determination, their whole attitude about get things done, not accepting excuses. That's all desperately needed by in our culture, in our world. So get out there and do it. Get out there, give of yourself, and you know what? I've said this before, but the more you give of yourself, guess what happens to your own brain? Yeah, the better off it gets. Have a great weekend. On a Friday, All Marine Radio is over and out.